This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello and welcome to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, coming to you live today from the studio for the entirety of the program. If you are with us on Facebook Live, a warm welcome to you. A big show in store with all the matches to preview ahead of a big weekend in Europe. We did have some, well, we had plenty of Europa League action, didn't we, Rick, this morning with some, well, 15 of the ties decided. 16 round of 16 participants now confirmed. The draw to come later tonight. We'll cast our eye over what could take place there. But of course, what will dominate the program will be previews of the top club competitions and the small matter of the League Cup final.
Just a small matter,
but a matter. Looking forward to that and plenty more. If you would like to give us a call at any time, 99 44 99 99 at any time in the program, at FNR underscore radio on Twitter. I even have the text machine beside me here, Rick.
You know what that means, Adrian.
0428 933 345. But more importantly than that, if you are with us live on Facebook, just drop a comment there. Much easier. As always, myself, Adriano Del Monte. If you don't know who I am, if you don't know this man, it's Rick D'Andrea, and he will now deliver the latest news headlines. Rick, of course, plenty of results overnight. The 16 participants for the final 16 in the Europa League confirmed, as I said, and a lot of news off the pitch, which we will get to as the show continues. Of course, we are here for the next couple of hours. Rick, over to you.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon again to all our listeners. And we'll start with the Europa League. Yes, as you did touch on, 15 of the 16 matches were played overnight, which means that the round of 32 has finally been run and won, with only two away teams, interestingly, getting the win. So the 3 points in theory. However, Arsenal progressed, beating Bate Borisov 3-0. Eintracht Frankfurt claimed a 4-1 win over Shakhtar Donetsk. Napoli defeated Zurich 2-0. Zenit St. Petersburg with an impressive entrance into the stadium at St. Petersburg there. They defeated Fenerbahce, of course. Chelsea got through against Malmo, and Rennes got a 3-1 away win over Betis. In other results, Dinamo Zagreb, Salzburg, Valencia, Dinamo Kiev, and Slavia Prague all, yes, they all won. Villarreal, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Galatasaray, Bayer Leverkusen, and Krasnodar all had overnight draws. And finally, there's not a lot of news floating around at the moment, Adrian, but the other big news story is relegation threatened side Caen in Ligue 1 have named Roland Courbis there as their new coach. However, this is the twist. He's a co-coach. Which means that he will be working alongside the current under fire boss in Fabien Marcadal. Courbis was formerly of Rennes and Montpellier, two teams that are doing quite well at the moment. Obviously, one had a win overnight or this morning in the Europa League. And he will be at Caen until the end of their current campaign in Ligue 1. Now, there are a lot of other sort of gossipy type stories, but not sort of enough to lead the top of the hour. But we'll throw it over back to you as we go through those 15 of 16 games in the European Europa League.
Looking forward to it. Well done. There is a big story as well, which we'll get to later from a transfer perspective. I'm just reading it now, but I had read it overnight. But Rabiot, our good friend who's been the centre of all of these big transfer stories, have you heard the latest?
Has he actually signed a pre-contract with somebody?
No.
So I have heard then, yes, but...
Well, again, he's been the player, for those who may have missed it, who's been linked everywhere. He's been linked everywhere. And Barcelona was the club that he had hoped to have joined. They then signed Frankie de Jong, who's now saying he hopes he can be a starter at Barcelona. But now for Rabiot, what does it mean? He's frozen out of PSG, and he has a well-documented agent. His agent is his mother. He has now sacked his mother because she has failed to materialise this Barcelona move.
So I'm wondering, out of the three super agents in Europe,
yes,
who will he sign with? Will it be Mino Raiola? Will it be Pini Sahavi? Or will it be Jorge Mendes? If you do end up sacking...
Is he of the quality that they'd go
well,
after?
Well, he'd be asking that sort of price tag that usually does go along with one of those three super agencies. The rumours have been persistent that he's wanting close to anywhere between 8 and 10 million euros a season. Mm. And usually when you are commanding that sort of fee, they're the three that are usually behind such a move to another club. So for me, it's narrowed down to one of those three. As for which one, well, I'd be taking a gander and sort of hinting that it probably will be Mino Raiola, just because he has done a lot of work with Ligue 1 clubs over the years. He has been linked with PSG and Marseille in the past quite strongly. That would be the one that I would be hinting towards. Mm-hmm. But Pini Zahavi, he is pretty much an up-and-coming. He does deal a lot with German teams. Maybe if he is given the go-ahead there, could it be a Bayern Munich, maybe even a Borussia Dortmund, maybe even one of the ones just below that could get his signature? I couldn't see Mendes doing it. Mendes seems to have very much a Spanish and a Portuguese flavour to him. I couldn't see him taking over the reins of being Adrian Rabiot's agent at this stage.
Well, we will see. We'll discuss that and plenty more as the show continues. Adrian has just come through in the Facebook Live saying that our audio is very low. Let us know if it is better now. I think we're nice and loud and clear. But a big show in store. We will go to the Europa League, though, with the 15 fixtures this morning. So, of course, Sevilla were through after taking care of Lazio 3-0 on aggregate, and that was earlier in the week. But the remaining 15 matches threw up some interesting results, and as you said, not too much success for teams on the road. What that means is that this morning, well, in actual fact, including the other day, meaning the 16 round of 32 ties, only three sides who finished as runner-up in their respective groups went through.
Mm.
And they were Krasnodar, Slavia
Shockingly,
Prague,
yeah.
and Rennes. And obviously, all surprisingly, those clubs. So it does go to show, this is interesting because we've seen in the Champions League a lot of the ties are quite well poised. They're very, very much up in the balance at the moment. But you just feel that the quality in the Europa League is really there, and the teams that are through to the round of 16, it's going to be very tough to win this competition. We've seen some performances this morning from some clubs, in particular from some of the big competitions, Eintracht Frankfurt particularly, who have really stepped up their claims to perhaps win what would be a surprise European title. But for Krasnodar, Rennes and Slavia Prague, they certainly go through as the underdogs, and Smokies maybe in the latter stages of the competition.
That result, and you mentioned them, not Krasnodar, Eintracht Frankfurt, I'm almost prepared to say that they could be the Smoky. The Smoky. Now, everyone's pretty much going to be leaning towards one of four teams: Napoli, Chelsea, Arsenal. And you probably throw in either a Zenit or a Valencia, just because they've got that European experience time and time again over the last, we'll say decade or so.
Mm.
But Eintracht Frankfurt, Kevin Trapp in goal, very, very good. Kostic and Da Costa in midfield, very, very solid. Costa has already got four goals this season. But then they've got that trident. And if you haven't heard of it, Luka Jovic, half of Europe wants him. And we've been speaking about
him. You've told me multiple times this morning, Rick, off air, but go on.
Ante Rebic, yes, who has been wanted as well, especially in England. Arsenal and Manchester United were two that were very strong on him last season and weren't able to get his signature. But Seb Heller as well, yeah, who also got on the score sheet. I don't know if too many defences that can shut those three down. Between the pace of their movement and their ability to get in behind, they will pose a very, very big headache going forward and going very deep into this competition.
A fine result here for Frankfurt. 4-1 winners against Shakhtar, 6-3 on aggregate. And it's a fair result given how good Shakhtar have been, particularly in the UEFA Champions League consistently in recent seasons. And the result, yes, you do have to say that Frankfurt will be a tough team to draw in the next round. Of course, that draw to come tonight.
Mm, so we'll wait and we'll bring it to you. Between 11 and midnight is when the draw will be done, local time here in Australia. So
I believe 11 p.m. it kicks off and the draw will start shortly after. Yeah. But look, they are certainly now in the mix. You did mention the other favourites, Chelsea, Arsenal, Inter, Napoli, Sevilla have to be considered,
yeah,
as well.
Definitely.
Valencia, of course, who are getting better and better. But Eintracht Frankfurt, definitely one just to watch as the round of 16 is upon us. And, of course, they'll have a break and then it will coincide with the second legs of the round of 16 in the UEFA Champions League. So a lot of football to be played for these sides. But other results, some of which you touched on, but we'll explore what these results mean for these respective clubs, and we'll go to those big favourites that I mentioned. Mm. Arsenal 3-0. This is exactly the scoreline we predicted. A 1-0 first leg loss. They came into this match knowing that if Bate were to score, they would need to score three anyway. It took them an hour, but they got it. An own goal on 4 minutes. Mustafi, 39th minute. Socrates with the third. On the hour mark, Arsenal 3, Bate Borisov 0. A good result, hardly surprising, but very dominant display by the Gunners.
And Unai Emery, the coach, actually put out what would be considered close to a full-strength team. Obviously, he didn't have Alexander Lacazette because he was a little bit of a naughty boy in the first leg. And then we sort of started to question, well, Arsenal 1-0 down away from home. Can they come back? Well, I've clearly answered that. 3-0, very, very dominant performance. What more can you really ask for from the Gunners?
We discussed yesterday how important this was for Arsenal because, of course, they're no certainty to qualify for the Champions League via a top four place in England, given United's resurgence, of course, Tottenham's recent dominance and City and Liverpool being well clear. So a big result here, and Arsenal will be keen to possibly win this competition. I think the lineup that he put out for this proves exactly that. So I think you're spot on there. So 3-0 win for Arsenal, very, very timely. Chelsea, they had a 3-0 win as well. This one against Malmo.
What's interesting about this is if you go back to the first leg, who were the two goal scorers in this one? Olivier Giroud and Ross Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
They reversed that order from the first leg. So that was the interesting factor here.
They did. And Hudson-Odoi getting a goal as well, of course, very close to leaving the club. So interesting that he does pop up.
Six goals this season in the Europa League.
Six goals in the Europa League. Giroud scores in his fifth straight Europa League game. So these guys who may not be at the club next season certainly have been prolific of late. Barkley with a nice free kick as well. Look, Malmo did, they did have a man sent off in this one as well. So that was at 1-0. Didn't make life easy, but it was always going to be tough with Chelsea coming in with that lead and two goals on the road. Chelsea go through and certainly will be a favourite and confident going in against anyone in the round of 16. So their form in Europe has been strong. Their domestic form, well, again, similarly to Arsenal, they're going to have to get their act together to assure themselves of a spot in next season's UEFA Champions League. Then the two big English clubs, the two big Italian clubs had very straightforward victories as well, particularly Inter Milan, Rick. 4-0 win over Rapid Vienna. They've struggled to score multiple goals, particularly in 2019. Vecino, Ranocchia, Perisic, Politano. 4-0 win. No Mauro Icardi again. Perfect night for the Nerazzurri.
It was, and what was even better is that Ivan Perisic, if you haven't seen the goal, do yourself a go and watch that. Go find that on social media because it was an absolute stunner. I don't know what it means for Inter, but what it can say is what? That's two matches in a row now that they've scored more than one goal. So I guess that might be the positivity that you take out of it going forward for the Nerazzurri. No Mauro Icardi, he was in the stands and he wore a very controversial hat that has got a lot of people with their tongues wagging. So it's going to be interesting to see what may happen because of that with his wife, Wanda Icardi.
That's an ongoing saga that won't end anytime soon. But a fine performance by Inter, 4-0 win, four different goal scorers, and they go through to the round of 16, 5-0 winners on aggregate. Napoli go through having scored five goals over their tie as well, 5-1 on aggregate. Napoli 2, Zurich 0 in this one. Good to see Simone Verde with a goal and Unas with an assist and a goal of his own. 2-0 win. Again, Napoli, for me, the favourite to win the competition. Zurich really didn't offer much in the entirety of the tie. Just one shot on goal in this match. And look, a near full strength Napoli outfit as well. A couple of different faces, but proving to me quite clearly that Ancelotti wants this piece of silverware and has identified it as the piece of silverware that they can actually win.
And
of course,
how good was Adamo Younes? One goal, one assist. Obviously, you know,
taking Roberto full advantage Verde. of his rare start.
Yeah, no, and very, very good to see him get on the score sheet. Very good to see him provide the assist. And Napoli probably could have had three or four as well between Insigne having a few chances on goal that should have seen them probably, you know, run away with the tie a little bit more. Could have been an even bigger result, unfortunately, there against Zurich.
Napoli go through 5-1 on aggregate, so a nice result for them. I'm really keen to see who they draw in the round of 16. You just feel, given Ancelotti's pedigree in Europe, that Well, he'll be tough to beat. From a managerial perspective, a tactical perspective, he'll be very difficult to beat for the opposing managers in this competition, all of whom, Sarri, Emery, Unai Emery, Spalletti, Ferenta, all of these favourites, they all have coaches who are under pressure for different reasons. I just like where Napoli and Ancelotti are at here. Other results this morning, Dinamo Zagreb go through 3-0 winners over Pilsen very comfortably on aggregate. Salzburg had a 4-0 win over Club Brugge. Valencia over Celtic 1-0, so Celtic still never with a win in Spain, and they go out 3-0 on aggregate. Very disappointing for Celtic because, again, that strong domestic form, not good enough. They were down to 10 men, just 8 minutes shy of halftime. Gamiero with the winner, and as I said, 3-0 on aggregate. Good for Valencia, though, because they are building some winning momentum in this second half of the season.
They are, and they are the ones to watch out for. We know what it is very tough to win at the Mestalla, especially if they happen to play there at for the second leg of the two-legged tie. We'll have to wait and see how they go in the draw in the next, 12 or so hours. But don't underestimate them. If they can somehow get a draw in the first leg, wherever they happen to be around Europe, going to the Mestalla is not an easy task anymore, and they can take it up to anybody on their day and even tear you apart.
Villarreal were the next Spanish club to go through, so they joined Valencia and Sevilla through to the next round. Did it the hard way. Sporting Lisbon equalised the tie. They levelled proceedings with a goal just shy of the halftime break through Bruno Fernandes. 1-1. It was an aggregate. Both teams winning 1-0 on the road at that point. But then that man, Pablo Fornals, with the goal 10 minutes from time. The equalising goal on the night, but the decisive goal in the tie. Villarreal draw 1-1, but go through 2-1 on aggregate. So for a team that are relegation threatened in Spain, that is a fine result against one of Portugal's very best.
No, it is. It's a very good result there for the LS Submarine. Maybe at the moment, Jesus Calleja is thinking that he can balance both staying up in La Liga and going deep into the Europa League. That defence held up a lot stronger. Sure, they conceded a goal on the stroke of half-time to Bruno Fernandes, but maybe this is how the Yellow Submarine might actually resurrect their season. And you know what? They're in with the mix of somehow getting through very deep and possibly even winning the trophy come the end of May, start of June.
Zenit St. Petersburg against Fenerbahce was a wonderful, wonderful tie. It really, really nice tie. Fenerbahce, 1-0 win in the first leg. 3-1 win here for Zenit. At one point, Fenerbahce trailed by 2-0. And then scored on the stroke of halftime to make it 2-2 on aggregate, meaning they were going through on away goals. And 14 minutes from time, Zenit popped up with the third. They win at 3-1, they go through 3-2 on aggregate. And I think they are one to watch, absolutely. But they were a Russian team we expected to go through. A Russian team we did not expect to go through, Rick. Krasnodar, quite extraordinary. These teams haven't played a professional game for 2 months plus. Krasnodar have gone to Bayer Leverkusen, a side that are in the best form of their season in Germany, 0-0 first leg. In the reverse, they've scored the opening goal of the tie 6 minutes from time to go one up. Leverkusen did pull one back, 1-1, but too little too late. Krasnodar incredibly go through 1-1 on away goals on aggregate. That is exceptional given how good Leverkusen have been.
And it's incredible because, have they played a match in a long time? No. So all of a sudden they are very fresh, but they're fresh due to the wintry conditions that do hit that Siberian region of Eastern Europe, and they're somehow through. It's incredible. It really is.
It's a fine performance. It's hard to understand how difficult it must be after a couple of months to have to respond and play a form team like that have been playing 2-3 games per week, week on week as the year gets underway. But that was that result there. Benfica knock out Galatasaray. So another Turkish team go out. This one 2-1 on aggregate, but 0-0 on the night. Rennes, this was a fair result. Betis become the first Spanish team out of European football in the knockout stage, the very least anyway, for 2019. 3-3 the first leg. Rennes 3-1 in the second leg. Lo Celso getting a goal for Betis, but not enough. Rennes with a fine result, and they go through to the round of 16. Dinamo Kiev 1, Olympiacos 0. So Dinamo Kiev 3-2 on aggregate. 2-2 in that first leg. That was a fine game, but Olympiacos just could not break their deadlock on the road here. And unfortunately, a goalless performance again away from home. They haven't been great away from home in European football. They bow out. And the final match, Genk 1, Slavia Prague 4. Not a good night. This one, Danny Vukovic, of course, the Australian goalkeeper, recently signed a new deal there, was stretched it off in what didn't look like a great moment there. So we hope that he's okay on the injury front. But Slavia Prague, 0-0 first leg. four goals on the road. They were heavy underdogs in this match. And Slavia Prague go through Genk. Bow out. So that's your 16 finalists confirmed. Those 15 winners this morning, along with Sevilla, of course, who took care of Lazio 3-0. And, well, that is that for the draw, which will be held tonight, 11 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, 1 p.m. Central European Time. Some potentially mouthwatering ties in the round of 16. Anyone can draw anyone at this point. Arsenal, Chelsea, Inter, Napoli. Eintracht Frankfurt, who, of course, is Rick's favourite to win the competition. And, of course, a few of those Smokies as well. We mentioned Krasnodar, Rennes, Slavia Prague. So really excited about what the round of 16 will hold for these sides. And, of course, Sevilla, one of the most interesting sides of the entire season, having to come through the qualifying rounds. The qualifying rounds after finishing seventh in La Liga last season, having played so much football, still top four in La Liga, and now having had one of the most impressive results across the two-legged tie with that 3-0 over Lazio in the tie that we really felt was the tie of the round. It's a remarkable run by them that certainly continues. So plenty more to come in the Europa League, but we will now move on to what else is to come in league competition this weekend. Of course, we have La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, Premier League, English League Cup final, Chelsea and City, and plenty more. So a lot more to come, which we will move over to now. And Rick, we will start in... Where do we start? Well, let's start in the Premier League, because the Premier League did have a break in recent days, given the fact that, well, last weekend it was FA Cup focused and there wasn't too much action on the league front. But the league action does get underway. First thing tomorrow morning, local time in Australia, of course, live on Optus Sport. Cardiff, Watford, West Ham, Fulham to open proceedings this weekend. Of course, some big, big matches, some season-defining matches. But no bigger match, I would say, in European football this weekend than, well, one of the final matches of the round in England, Manchester United up against Liverpool. Of course, a famous rivalry, this one. United in fourth place, 51 points. A point clear of Arsenal and Chelsea, 14 points behind their rivals Liverpool, who are second with 65 points. This promises to be one of the most heated matches between these two proud clubs for some time. Of course, Liverpool off the back of, well, the performance midweek in the Champions League against Bayern Munich, the 0-0, they'll be keen to respond. United, of course, well, poor performance firstly against PSG, but they responded in the FA Cup last weekend against Chelsea, that 2-0 win at Stamford Bridge. So United in some good touch. Liverpool, which is one win in their last four competitions. And obviously Liverpool, well obviously, but the recent form, they've only lost once against United since the start of 2016. So in the last seven or eight matches, Liverpool have been tough to beat for United. And that's no surprise, given United haven't been at their very best. But this one on a knife's edge, of course. A couple of key players still out for United with, well, Martial still sidelined, Lingard certainly out, and other players still missing. Liverpool with a few defensive concerns, though, against the red-hot in-form United attack. Danger game here for both sides, but how important 3 points are for both sides in this occasion?
Absolutely. I mean, we know the pressure that Liverpool are under at the top of the table with Manchester City basically breathing down their neck. We know that Manchester United themselves want to try and get themselves into that top four. I'd almost be saying that 3 points in this one would almost determine their entire season going forward. And I know that's a very big claim and it sounds very broad and open, but you think about where have Manchester United come from the last two and a bit months. They've come from pretty much almost becoming a mid-table mediocre side to being in with a chance of qualifying for the Champions League and maybe being an outside chance of getting a top three spot, depending on how Tottenham and Manchester City in particular goes. Whereas Liverpool, they've just had a 0-0 against Bayern Munich, probably one that they would be thinking, we should have won, we should have gotten some results. Now they're going to have to back up against another team that is constantly, you know, playing in the Champions League, featuring in Europe, and they have to beat them, which is going to be the crucial thing going forward. It's as simple as that.
How does this one play out, though? Of course, both sides. It's funny, we discussed this yesterday with the City fan that gave us a call on the program, Rick, but Manchester City, of course, wants a United win in this game. Both United and Liverpool are still in the UEFA Champions League, and while United perhaps a little more optimistic than Liverpool will be, but both sides, were failing to score in the first leg. Both sides still wanting to make a deep run in that competition. Both sides with injury concerns. Tough to see how this one plays out. Do United approach this game knowing that they're coming up against one of the very best in English football? The, well, favourites or not, they're level on points with City, who are the league leaders, but of course Liverpool have a game in hand. Is a point enough for United here? Does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer think, well, if we can take a point from this match against this red-hot Liverpool outfit, despite the fact they've only won one in their last four across all competitions, is that good enough for us to hold off Arsenal and Chelsea? Or, you know what, do we go for it? Do we take it up to Liverpool? And, well, maybe we can do what Leicester, West Ham and others have done very recently, and that's take a point or more. So I'm interested to see how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer approaches this match. And we know that he has now been put to the test, Paris Saint-Germain and Thomas Tuchel, Maurizio Sarri and Chelsea, after what was a relatively easier start to life at the helm with all of those successive wins to get that start underway. I remember his first few matches, Huddersfield, Cardiff, Bournemouth. There weren't too many difficult matches. Newcastle, Reading in the league as well. So some straightforward matches to get things underway. But now all of a sudden, he's up against the very best. And Jurgen Klopp, I think tactically, will have his measure. In fact, I'm almost certain he'll have his measure. How does he respond if put under pressure here? And that will be the big test. So I think United will actually play a little more conservatively, if I am to make a prediction, in this match. And I think that conservative approach may see them take a point, but I do not think that United will, look, they will want to win. I do not think that they will win, and I do not think that they are capable of winning against Liverpool side who are playing a much higher level of football this season.
So you're suggesting more that Liverpool will win, maybe United might be able to sneak a draw
at absolute best. I think United will understand that they're the level here. If he tries to match Klopp tactically, we know how Liverpool play when teams come at them. They've beaten the very best doing that. Mm. I just don't think that United, with those key absences, particularly up top, I don't think that they will be able to match Klopp and Liverpool. And the way to counter that is just to play a slightly more conservative brand. So we may see the Mourinho side of United re-emerge, but it's certainly a tough match for Liverpool, yes. But for United, they will not want to leave Old Trafford without a point. And I think a point will be more than enough for Solskjaer and United fans to go home very happy from this one. But again, United fans, do you feel maybe you're playing with a higher level of confidence than that and you can take it right up to Liverpool? Perhaps. Let us know at FNR_radio. I'm not so sure. But in the end, I think this game could very well end all square. But I certainly tip Liverpool to be the better team on the day and come away with a win.
Fair enough. I'll tip a draw. 2-2 draw. Just to be a bit different.
I don't think United are going to be capable of scoring that many goals against this Liverpool side. We saw how well Liverpool nullified the impact of the Bayern attackers. United don't have that same level of quality up top at the moment. I think it'll be pretty straightforward for them in comparison. Van Dijk will return. Mm. Liverpool will be far too strong defensively. So if they try and play at Liverpool and try and push them back and Liverpool drop, I just think, again, the counter-attacking flair and quality that Liverpool have, they'll be too strong. Yep. Liverpool by far superior for me to United, but a massive test here for Solskjaer and United. I'm going to say 0-1 will be the result. Liverpool to win at Old Trafford. And again, we know how famous these rivalries are. So anything can happen. It's like any derby that's out there. Of course, this not by location. But we also know that Liverpool haven't had too much success at Old Trafford this century, Rick. They have won. How many games have they won? They won a couple in the earlier years of the 2000s. But since 2004, just two wins at Old Trafford, Rick. Their last coming in 2014, 3-0 win there. And I dare say a very different look side. Steven Gerrard with a double and Luis Suarez with a goal there.
Very different.
Gerrard also missing a penalty, which could have made it 4-0. 0-1 for me. Liverpool to pick up the all-important 3 points. Now, that result will be important, but City aren't in action this weekend because, of course, of the League Cup final.
They are technically, but just not in the
league. So what that means is now is that this, all of a sudden, this extra game advantage that City have and that perceived pressure that we've talked about, well, that will not be a factor anymore because they will be on the same games. There is a midweek round of action in the Premier League next week where City will take on West Ham. But I will tell you, City will have one eye on, they'll just have an eye or two just on Liverpool's performance against United. But as for the other teams this weekend, Harry Kane should be back for Tottenham. away to Burnley. And I think the timing is absolutely right here for a Tottenham side that have won four straight games in the league. They did have that resounding 3-0 win in the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund. Came back, perfect timing, because, again, I've doubted them from the start. But how much longer without some key figures could they continue this run? And, well, another winnable game this weekend, perfect timing for Kane to return.
And we know that Burnley are one of the informed teams going through, you know, the last, what, month and a half, 2 months. So it's about 9 or 10 match days because there have been some Wednesday or Tuesday, Wednesday fixtures. Yeah, it is going to be important, but what does Pochettino do with the England captain? Do you start him from minute number one, or do you bring him in with, say, half an hour to go, maybe a little bit less, and ease him back in? I know the match is quite important for Tottenham and what's going on, of course, that little bit below them in the Champions League, in the fourth place, the run for home to make and get that fourth spot. What do you do with him?
I think you play him an hour. I think you start him and play him for at least an hour is what I will do. If he's fit and he's ready to go, you play him, because this is a big game against a Burnley side that have not lost a game in the league in 2019. In fact, their only loss in 2019 was that 5-0 in the FA Cup against Manchester City. Mm-hmm. They're in good form, very, very good form. And in fact, in their last few Premier League games, 4 wins, 3 draws, they're playing at a high level. Unbeaten in 7 league games, no loss since a 5-1 against Everton. And that was off the back of a really poor stretch. Also, earlier on in the season, when they played Tottenham in the reverse, it was 1-0 at Wembley. They took it up to them there. And that was the Eriksen goal, 91st minute, very late on. Big game, this one, for Tottenham. I think you have to play Kane from the start. And despite the 9-point lead over United in terms of the race for fourth, they're 10 clear of Arsenal and Chelsea. It would have to be a disaster and a catastrophic end for them to their season if they are to slip up from here. So play Kane, see him out for a half an hour if he's up to it, and get the points, because this is a big, big game and Burnley need to be beaten, and they haven't been beaten for some time. They haven't lost in 2019, as I said, in the English Premier League. So a very tough test here for a Tottenham side. But you just feel they're a win or two away from all but consolidating a spot in the top four.
Yeah, they're not too far away.
Not too far away at all. Other games this weekend, Cardiff, Watford, West Ham, Fulham. Both of those games tomorrow morning. Fulham need a win, don't they, Rick?
Simple as that.
Absolutely need a win. But they come up against a West Ham side who, look, winless in their last four. Only 2 goals in that time as well, but West Ham is still within, well, knocking on the door of European League football.
They are. The interesting thing that comes to mind for me is we know that Fulham are on that very, very horrible run in London derbies. Now, if you don't recall, they've lost to everybody for the last 9 matches. And the old record was 8. They've lost to Arsenal, they've lost to Chelsea, they've lost to Tottenham, they've lost to West Ham. They've lost to every single London derby team. Claudio Ranieri does not want this record to keep on going. And even though he didn't take over at the time when the record did begin, he is part of the history of it all.
Correct.
So Fulham have to try and get a result here against one of those London teams to stop that rot. Could West Ham be the one? Well, I'm thinking no. I think West Ham might have enough firepower up top to be able to get the result. And I know a few of the boys out the back in the studio who are West Ham supporters are very happy to hear that. But I feel that Fulham, unfortunately, they're gone. I think they have
You've been
no
saying
chance.
That for some time, Rick. But I don't think Fulham will win this game, but I still hold some hope. I don't know why, but I still hold some hope that they'll survive. Bournemouth Wolves, another match. Huge game for Newcastle. They're at home to Huddersfield. Absolute must win. Absolute must win. They won those 2 games against City and Cardiff, but then slipped up to Tottenham and had that draw with Wolves where there was that late equaliser last time out. So they're in good form. You just feel that this is a must win, though, to get themselves well clear of the bottom few. Leicester Palace, a big one, and of course Arsenal Southampton to close out the round with United Liverpool. So, look, Arsenal Southampton, Arsenal have to win. Yeah. Arsenal absolutely have to win this game because they have an opportunity here where United take on, well, the favourites to win the competition in Liverpool. They need to get themselves back into the top four. And, of course, no match for Chelsea means that Chelsea will focus on the League Cup final, but Arsenal also can go clear of them. This is a huge weekend for Arsenal at home against Southampton. And, of course, Chelsea in that League Cup final against City. Quick word on that. City going is clear favourites for me.
They'll probably end up winning, and they'll probably end up winning by a big, comfortable... Oh,
I'm like even 6-0 2 weeks ago?
I don't think that big, but I'm thinking a solid 3-0. Mm. And normally you don't associate these sort of rival matches as being of that sort of scoreline. You'd say probably, you know, 1-0, maybe a 2-1, maybe even a 2-0 at the most, sometimes even 3-1. But it's a 2-goal margin. when you look at how both teams have been playing over the last month, this is not going to be a 2-0. No. This is not even going to remotely resemble what happened when the last two teams met. This is going to be on for young and old. I'm even going to go as far as saying a good 3-0, maybe even 4-1. Maybe Chelsea might be able to peg one through that City defence, which looks a little bit iffy. And if Sarri can somehow copy what our friend Dominic Tedesco did midweek for Schalke against City, I can see them getting one, but that at most, I can clearly see, of course, Man City getting at least three in this one.
Well, Maurizio Sarri's future has become unclear.
The talking point.
And the talking point over the last couple of weeks. We have more on that to come very shortly. But look, I think City will win quite easily 2-0, and it will be 2-0, my prediction. It will be the first of potential quadruple. Again, that's what they're aiming for this season. They're playing it down, but they're saying we will just focus on each game as it comes. But they are aware that they can certainly win the League Cup, the FA Cup, Premier League and Champions League this season.
Yeah, and Adriano's come through on our Facebook Live and he's actually said that he'd like to see Napoli against ex-players Jorginho and Higuain. Now, obviously, if you refer that to Chelsea, he wants to see them also do well against City. So, yes, for his sake and the former Napoli connection, that would be nice, but I don't know how they are going to go went up against the likes of Fernandinho and Aguero, who are in a lot better form.
Looking forward to that game. Of course, Chelsea up against Manchester City, the winner, to win the first piece of official silverware in England this season.
Could you see, now this is going to be a little bit left of field, but could you see Sarri wanting the EFL Cup? Because it will at least get Chelsea definitely into Europe. I know his aim is to get into the Champions League, and that's probably the instruction that Roman Abramovich has given him.
They'll finish in the top six anyway. So, I don't think it's going to be a game changer. They're 11 points clear of Wolves in seventh. They're definitely finishing in the top six. I don't think it'll be a game changer in terms of securing his job. Yes, he'll want it. A piece of silverware is a piece of silverware, but is it going to be the factor that saves his tenure at Chelsea? No.
Probably not.
No. They've already said, again, we've said this every day this week, Rick, but they've already said, the moment that UEFA Champions League football isn't an option, meaning top four, he'll be gone. And so that's the clear goal. There are two ways for Chelsea to achieve that. Win the Europa League or finish top four in England. And to be honest, I don't think they'll do either. I don't. I did. I had them in for third at the start of the season, but I don't think they'll do either now. And it's unfortunate for Maurizio Sarri. But we'll leave the English discussion there. Let's pick up that topic about Maurizio Sarri in his future and just go to some off-field news before we preview the other four competitions in Europe, the Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga and Ligue 1 this weekend. Big news with Maurizio Sarri. Reports out of Italy, La Repubblica, running with this, and it's been picked up by multiple other sources elsewhere. Maurizio Sarri to Roma this summer as a replacement for Eusebio Di Francesco. Now, that's an interesting one. Maurizio Sarri, of course, with Napoli, with all that success in those three or four seasons he was there. If he were to go to Roma, firstly, that would mean Di Francesco must leave, which has been strongly rumoured for the entirety of the campaign. And then when it is, Roma seem to win, and then those
he seems to
go
somehow
away.
Survive getting so close to the edge of the cliff. He just somehow gets a result or two that just edges him back that little bit further, and he never quite goes over, and he's shown the door.
Very, very much the case. It's been bizarre, but he's doing enough. Just, but you just feel still his position at Roma is on a knife's edge. So, firstly, would Sarri be an upgrade given his performances this season? Would you be confident, given his success with Napoli, that this would be enough? But secondly, and more importantly, would he and his style of play be suited to the current crop of Roma players? Because keep in mind that if Roma do not make the Champions League, they're currently fifth, well, it's going to be hard to lure big names to complement what's already there.
That's right. So that's going to be the first issue. You know, we've discussed how did Sarri lure Jorginho and ultimately lure Higuain to Chelsea's because of what he felt he needed to get his Sarri ball style playing
right.
Well. If he were to go to Rome, could he lure those sorts of type of players back in order to play that role? Because, well, there's not really anybody in the world that can play Sarri ball like Jorginho. Now, unfortunately, he's been found out on a few occasions in England. So maybe he might want to have a return to Italy and maybe he might follow the coach. But he certainly doesn't need Gonzalo Higuain should he go to Roma.
Mm.
He's already got Edin Dzeko and essentially a couple of years younger, in a lot better form than what Higuain has been over the last 12 to 18 months. I don't know if it's going to be the right fit, but I don't know.
Well, who knows? Higuain's future is still unclear. He may end up at Roma with Sarri if that were to happen because, well, this is the other interesting element of this entire debate. So, La Repubblica in Italy saying Maurizio Sarri to Roma to replace Di Francesco at season's end. Reports going on to say that if Chelsea do sack Maurizio Sarri, Gonzalo Higuain will leave. If they don't sack Maurizio Sarri, Gonzalo Higuain will stay. If he is sacked, Mauro Icardi will be target number one. Let's take the discussion there.
But wasn't he target number one in July and August and the early part of the
summer?
Maybe
not when Sarri comes in.
Well, unfortunately, Chelsea had at least three choices for strikers this summer. Mauro Icardi was one, and we've mentioned that many times. Gonzalo Higuain was the other.
Mm-hmm.
And Krzysztof Piątek was the one that ultimately then gets...
They'd be kicking themselves at that, surely.
They've picked the wrong one. It doesn't matter what Abramovich and Sarri say. They've made that choice, and they've made the incorrect one at the end of the day, haven't they? We've seen how Icardi has flourished, even though now things are at a point where it's an irreparable relationship, reportedly. We've seen how Piątek has gone pretty much since he joined... Well, firstly, joined Genoa, went on that tremendous run of goal scores. What was it? 9 goals or 9 in 8 matches or something to that effect. And then he started off his new life at Milan like a house on fire. What, 5 goals in as many matches?
6 in 5.
6 in 5 now. You just feel that Chelsea, unfortunately, in the stubbornness of Sarri, has gotten the wrong centre forward in. And you've also got to imagine he's forced Alvaro Morata out.
Yep.
And Morata was scoring in particular in the Europa League. They've gotten that, I can't believe I'm going to say, they've gotten that decision so, so wrong.
Mm. They don't always go your way, but certainly Chelsea have made a few wrong calls in recent times. Matt says that Higuain will end up in China or Saudi Arabia.
Well, this is the thing. Well, it could be the case now because he's not going to get too many more opportunities, you feel, in Europe. He's done Spain. He's had his adventure with Real Madrid. He's done Italy with both Napoli and Juventus. Mm. He's doing England at the moment, and you'd say that he's almost not being suited to the style and the pace of the English Premier League, or he's not capable of handling the defence at the right old age of 31, 32. I don't think he's going to go to Germany. Mm. I can't see Dortmund or Bayern picking him up. I don't think they're looking for that sort of age profile in their squad makeup at the moment. There aren't many, many other chances. Is he going to go to France? Mm. Well, possibly, but I don't think many could afford his wages.
Interesting.
So maybe it has to be a move to the east or, you know, further out.
Just a few other transfer stories before we get back to the action on the pitch. So who knows what the future holds for Gonzalo Higuain. But some of the other top clubs do have links to top players. We discussed in depth... earlier on in the week, but the future of Diego Godin is almost done. Inter Milan, this is funny. Did you see Inter Milan fans at the Rapid Vienna match? Being quite comical. Had Inter Milan shirts with Diego Godin on the back. Of course, he has been linked with a free transfer to Inter from Atleti for many months now. But I think that was more just a nice little jab at their rivals, Juventus, Rick, because Godin, of course, scored the second goal in the UEFA Champions League match between Atleti and Juve a couple of days ago. But Inter, Godin, Marotta spoken about it, said that's almost done. They'll be expecting to announce that officially shortly. That is an enormous get for Inter Milan, who are already one of the best defensive sides in world football.
Andrea Ranocchia, now you've got Martin Skriniar, now you throw in Diego Godin.
De Vrij
as well. It means that currently Luciano Spalletti has one of the strongest centre-back combinations in Italy.
Yep.
Maybe not, I'm not going to go as far as saying in Europe. I think there are far more better. But at least it gives that position on the park a lot more certainty going forward that the four of them can look after that area in whichever combination the coach ultimately wants to utilise. And they do keep clean sheets.
Marotta, that's exactly what he highlighted. Just the fact that they're adding quality to that area of the park. But the point is as well, they have struggled to score goals. So you can have the best defence in the world, but you do need to go the other way and do that. And with Icardi's future very unclear, who knows what the future holds there. But Marotta just confirming we're very far along in the negotiations for Godin. I'm happy for him for his goal yesterday. Very optimistic and think we will officially announce it soon. Big story.
It is. Big story.
Big, big story there. So that's Godin all but done. Elsewhere, Barcelona reports from Mundo Deportivo, Barcelona are targeting a move for Marcus Rashford. They want him at any cost, but the... This is a contradiction.
This is,
They want him at any cost, but they want him at the right price. So they're willing to go all out for him, but within reason. And I think that Barcelona's reported interest in him has been intensifying in recent months. I'm surprised by that, though. Rashford as the replacement for who?
Suarez. Suarez's knee. We've talked about
Suarez's knee, yes.
That's the problem, is unfortunately the Uruguayan and that knee, it's going to cause a lot more issues over the coming and ensuing years. As much as he can go in and get an arthroscope cleaned up and be ready to go after pretty much 4 weeks, it's something that Barcelona ultimately need to resolve up top. Maybe you start to think about the future beyond the Uruguayan. We've talked about who have they been linked to. Luka Jovic, my boy at Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yes.
Nicolas Pepe from Lille. Now yes. We've started to mention, of course, Marcus Rashford. I'm sure there will be a couple of other centre forwards that might get brought along. Maybe Duvan Zapata, who's about 24, 25 at the moment, the Colombian international Atalanta. But you can already start to see that there are thoughts about a striker who can prolifically score goals, who can maybe get 20 to 30 each season. Suarez, we know, has been struggling for goals, especially in the Champions League. But there is a definite plan in place to look for someone who's going to lead that line for the next 10 years, in particular alongside Ousmane Dembele.
You mentioned Pepe. His boss recently came out and spoke and said, I can tell you he'll be playing in a red shirt somewhere next season.
Well, a lot of teams that are after him are in red, so that almost does imply
being
as well.
Being pretty funny.
Almost does imply that Manchester City and Juventus are probably two that aren't in the hunt.
That's
the
right.
Other one being Borussia Dortmund. If we really want to look at it a little bit more analytically, no Chelsea as well. But it does throw up as to who might be wanting him.
Real Madrid, Marca reporting that they will let Bale leave for Eden Hazard or Eriksen. And we know that. It doesn't seem via those reports they could get both, but we know that a big fish will have to move on to bring in the next generation of Galacticos. And Eden Hazard, for me, is certainly the favourite. But Eriksen very strongly on the radar. And no surprise that Bale will be one to make way.
Yeah, well, I think the Bale move is 12 months too late, unfortunately.
Agreed.
Even though he made those...
12 months too late, but after losing Ronaldo, which maybe they weren't aware of, that would have been hard to lose both of them without replacement. Even though he hasn't had that much of an impact... Still,
it's enough.
It's enough.
It's enough to sort of throw the apple cart off really, really well. Maybe, though, after the Champions League final and the comments that were made and then ultimately what happened with Ronaldo, maybe Real Madrid should have swallowed their medicine, maybe taken two scoops and two spoonfuls and cut ties with both of them and then also with Zinedine Zidane. Just to almost start afresh and give Lopetegui, and we know what happened there, but give Solari the time to settle in, remould the team, and then hopefully get it to the point where they are at now, minus the Welshman.
Don't want to toot our own horn, Rick, but...
We've said it.
Called the Lopetegui sacking before he even signed the papers.
Yes, I know you did.
It was absurd. Everything about that was absurd. But credit to Real Madrid for turning it around now and still being, well, competitive in everything, to be honest. They're in a well-placed position to make a Copa del Rey final. They incredibly got themselves above Atletico Madrid in La Liga, which I don't know how they achieved. And, well, they're in the Champions League round of 16 against Ajax and...
They lead 2-1.
They lead 2-1. Just on that match, just quickly, did you see the Dutch Eredivisie, what they've done for Ajax?
No, what have they done?
So, AS reported this in Spain. Ajax have been handed a boost by the Eredivisie, the Dutch competition, who have agreed to postpone their league fixture the weekend before the Champions League second leg against Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. Huge. Because... in the lead-up to that second leg, Santiago Solari's men have two Clásicos, the second leg of the Copa del Rey and the La Liga Clásico, and then it's Ajax. So that week there for Real Madrid will be intense, will be three must-win matches. Meanwhile, Ajax will have their feet up and just relaxing and getting ready for one game and one game only.
But have they also done it? Now, you have to think of this in the context of UEFA and in particular, the coefficient.
Absolutely, they have.
We know that Lokomotiv Moscow have absolutely stunk up the Russian Premier League with basically not getting any result. I think they got one draw ultimately. And that one automatic spot that the RPL obtained last season is on a knife's edge from being lost, dependent on what happens with Ajax in the Champions League.
Correct.
If they somehow go through the quarterfinal, who goes above them? The Eredivisie.
Exactly right.
Who drops out? The RPL.
Yep.
So this is why, this is a little bit of a political move here by the Eredivisie and the KVMB, sorry, but I can understand why they are doing it.
Of course.
Very, very shrewd move here. Very shrewd.
Smart move indeed, but Dutch football on the rise. And, well, the Dutch football, again, you see a few of these leagues recently. Ligue 1, Kylian Mbappe said the French need to support us. We need to come together. We need to support one another. I'm supporting Lyon and the other teams that are involved. There is that element, which I like. It adds a competitive element, a bit of respect amongst clubs from the same competition. So it is good to see. But the Eredivisie is certainly knowing that if Ajax can go deep, well, that position may very well become theirs.
Mm.
So well done to them. Real Madrid, though, what a week that will be. Barca, Ajax.
It will be very, very. But just quickly, do Ajax want to give PSV as well that other automatic spot and have two automatic? Because it's one and one qualifier.
They want to do whatever it takes because there's no guarantee that they themselves will win the championship every season.
Mm.
And
they haven't been in the last few.
Exactly right. So they want to do what's best for the competition. What's best for the competition is, well, very clearly, more positions available for clubs from the Eredivisie to go through. And we see how beneficial it can be. And given the wave of Dutch talent coming through, it's an important time for these clubs and these young players to be playing in the UEFA Champions League. They are currently 4 points behind PSV. The Eredivisie season has been very good. Very, very good. PSV were flying early on. They have slipped up in three of their last five games, though, and they only have dropped points in four games this season. So that has opened the door slightly, but Ajax as well have also slipped up in three of their last five. It's been a topsy-turvy campaign. Ajax recently on the receiving end of a 6-2 loss to Feyenoord, a 2-2 as well. Sorry, a 4-4 they were involved in. They had a 1-0 loss a couple of weekends ago. So it is an entertaining competition. Inconsistent results, to be honest, but a lot of goals. And PSV Ajax lead the way there with Feyenoord in third.
I'll just get your brief words. And Matt's just come through and he wants to know about his Napoli, but he wants to know about Dolberg from Ajax. Would he be going to Napoli? Now, I'm 50-50 on this. It is still a report. But if you've already lost Frankie de Jong, you're about to lose, you would assume, Matthias de Ligt.
Can you lose
Dolberg? I don't know. That's why I'm 50-50. And I know Ajax are all about regeneration and rebuilding and, you know, selling a little bit of the farm off to get the next crop through and whoever the next superstar is in European football. I just don't know if they're prepared to lose three quality individuals.
That's one element. Will they be prepared to lose? But also there is strong interest elsewhere from England. Arsenal and Man United also reportedly interested. So would Napoli even win that battle between those three sides for the 21-year-old Danish international?
Plus you also throw in Van de Beek, who's been attracting interest. You throw in Ziyech as well. I don't know if Ajax are going to sell everybody off to try and get this new generation through, especially now that they are on the cusp of a quarter final in the Champions League.
23 goals a couple of seasons ago has been injury riddled since. I'm not sure. For Napoli, I don't think it's the play that they should be going for. I think Napoli are not in a position to be developing youngsters for longer term success.
Mm.
Napoli are ready to win now. You have one of the best Italian managers in the history of Italian football. You have some very important key players and you have a club, a team that have been the second best team clearly in Italy in the last four seasons. You are ready to win.
That's right.
This isn't an investment that I would be making if I was Napoli at this point. And particularly if there is interest from Arsenal and United, you'd expect the price to be inflated. I would go for a more ready-made player if I was Napoli. And again, I'd take an Edinson Cavani. For example, if we're talking in terms of quality and offering and age, I'd take still an experienced Edinson Cavani over a Dahlberg.
Maybe Gonzalo Higuain returns.
Gonzalo Higuain. I'd entertain those options there, obviously with Carlo Ancelotti at the helm. So, interesting one there. PSG, of course, the current owner of Edinson Cavani, they have released a player overnight, Rick. Lassana Diarra.
Yes.
So Lassana Diarra they've mutually agreed to terminate his contract.
Well, he's only played, one or two games at the most. Yeah.
Moments after he retired. So Lassana Diarra has retired from football on the same night, strange night for PSG, where they have ended their 13-year relationship with Emirates, the airline. So a changing of the guard, I guess, at Paris Saint-Germain. Mm. But Lassana Diarra, after a wonderful career, calls time on his playing days. The very last one, there was talk that Lassana Diarra might go to the Middle East, as a lot of them tend to do. One player who did recently go to the Middle East, still in his 20s, Sebastian Giovinco, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
He has spoken for the First time since leaving Toronto. Now, keep in mind that when he left Toronto, sorry, he's not in his 20s. I got that completely wrong. He's 32.
He's 32.
But when he left Toronto,
it was almost on bad terms.
It was on very bad terms. And keep in mind, he was the MVP of an MLS season. He scored
the season before.
Season before, yep, exactly. He scored more goals from a dead ball position, so a free kick, than any other player in his time there. So he was extremely effective. He was very good. He was great for the game. Then he fell out with Toronto, and he was very public with it on Instagram. We covered that. He was not pleased with the way that they'd handled the situation. But he's spoken now after joining Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia and saying that he has a desire to become the first player to win a European title, an American title, and a Saudi Arabian title. So a small piece of history, but he's added that as an explanation for something that prompted his move.
Well, we wish him all the very best of luck in Saudi Arabia and with Al Hilal. And let's see if he can achieve that remarkable milestone.
32. The reason I got that wrong was because he still feels like he's 28, 29. But he's a player who's always felt like he was a young up-and-comer. And always was, and was exceptional. Do you remember in his Juventus days, Rick, he was... After Del Piero was the next
He was the
best.
Heir apparent, wasn't he?
He was. And from a free kick-taking perspective, he was brilliant. Just never... He was crowned as the next number 10. He'd be the player to take this US side on, but just never fulfilled the expectations that were set.
He's always reminded me a little bit of, with age-wise anyway, he reminds me of Kylian Mbappe always being 19.
And that's right.
And he's no longer 19, to clarify the record here.
I'm sure 5-6 years from now, we'll still feel as if Kylian Mbappe is still that 19, 20, 21-year-old. I'm certain.
Even though he'll be in somewhere in his mid-20s and possibly with the second World Cup draped around his neck.
Will France do that? We will see. A few minutes to go in this first hour live on Facebook, of course, the second hour live via our app or our website, footballnationradio.com. Do join us for that second hour. We'll be taking your calls and your tweets at FNR_radio and previewing the Serie A, Bundesliga, Ligue 1 and La Liga in depth, as well as recapping some of those scorelines from overnight. Just a few other bits and pieces to wrap up the hour. Rick, do you know today... Well, yesterday, 21st of February, Real Madrid celebrated 1,000 days as champions of Europe.
No, I did not know that.
That's incredible. Wow. So obviously they've won the last three crowns. So since winning that first crown, they have been champions of Europe for 1,000 days. Not too many sides have done that, and certainly not in the UEFA Champions League era.
I think they're the only ones who have done it, haven't they?
Correct.
They did it in the 50s and 60s. So
correct.
That was the only other time.
No club before them had ever won back-to-back UEFA Champions League crowns. So they're certainly the first to be European champions for 1,000 days.
It's an incredible feat. We struggle sometimes to think in this modern era, these records with all the money that have been spent and how teams can go back to back in any competition, but to do it at the highest of European levels
and
above
back-to-back.
All leagues, back to back to back, that is absolutely incredible.
It is. It really is. So congratulations to them, and they'll be hoping to add a few more days to that tally with another deep run this season, but Ajax will be a tough test in the second leg. While on the Champions League topic, just to wrap up the hour, Massimiliano Allegri has again spoken and taken to Twitter after his side's devastating defeat for Juventus in the first leg against Atletico Madrid. He said on Twitter, 20 days to get ready for a challenge to win together, basically suggesting we need to stick together and bounce back. And when he spoke to the press as well and said, we were not dead after losing 3-0 at home to Real Madrid last season, and we are not dead now. Positive talk, but talk is one thing, actions are another. They need to respond, and he needs to lead the way with the response in that second leg. And again, we discussed in depth yesterday, but are they ready to respond? Because from what we've seen, the answer is no.
That's what it seems at the moment. And I don't know how versatile and how conservative, Allegri will be in the second leg, but he needs to throw that all out the window. He needs to go all out and get three goals and hopefully get an early one to really throw the apple cart out the window.
He's being very positive, but after the game yesterday, the seventh trending, this is a weird way to end the program, but the seventh highest trending Twitter topic in Italy, okay, was Zinedine Zidane. Now, there was no rumours or reports of Zinedine Zidane. What it referenced, of course, were Juve fans who were saying, we've had enough of Allegri, let's get Zidane in. And there was the outpour of emotion post-game was that significant that Zinedine Zidane was a trending topic in Italy. At the same time, that's quite incredibly, after the defeat against Atletico, Juve's share price on the stock market dropped by 10%.
Well, there's only one thing that can somehow lift that, and that is the only way that
UEFA Champions League crown.
It's the only way that's going to, price is going to go back up.
It's the only way he's going to hold his job as well. The very last one this morning, we didn't mention the Europa League. Lee Kang-in, the Valencia player, the attacking midfielder from South Korea, became the first player born in the 21st century to appear for a Spanish side in the Europa League.
Congratulations to him.
That's us done. Plenty more coming up. Do stay tuned to our app or our website, footballnationradio.com. Previews of the Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1, Bundesliga, and plenty more. Stay tuned. This is Afternoons, and we are FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome to the second hour of Afternoons today on FNR Football Nation Radio. We have recapped a big night of action in the UEFA Europa League. We've also looked ahead at what's to come in the Premier League and League Cup final between Chelsea and Manchester City. 6-0 a couple of weeks ago. Hopefully not again for the sake of Blues fans. But in the second hour, Serie A, Bundesliga, La Liga and Ligue 1 to come. We'll also recap some of those big transfer story headlines as well. And we will, as we do every Friday, thanks to our good friends at Bet In Tips, Rick. Bet In Tips, we will provide you our latest tips and best tips for the weekend's action. That will come at the close of today's show. So stay tuned for that and plenty more. 9944999, 0428 93345, at FNR_radio. Just some of the ways you can get in touch. Of course, we are brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. Rick, the latest news headlines, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Adrian, and good afternoon again to all our listeners. The round of 32 in the UEFA Europa League has been run and won, with only two away teams obtaining wins this morning local time. Arsenal progressed past Bate Borisov 3-0. Eintracht Frankfurt claimed a 4-1 win over Shakhtar Donetsk. Napoli defeated Zurich 2-0. Zenit St. Petersburg defeated Fenerbahce. Chelsea got past Malmo, and Rennes got a 3-1 away win over Real Betis. In other results, Dinamo Zagreb, Salzburg, Valencia, Dinamo Kiev, Inter and Slavia Prague all won, while Villarreal, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Galatasaray, Bayer Leverkusen and Krasnodar all obtained draws. And the other major news that broke overnight is that relegation-threatened side Caen have named Roland Courbis as their new coach. However, in an interesting twist, he will only be a co-coach, working alongside under-fire boss Fabien Marcadal. Courbis was formerly of Rennes and Montpellier and will be at Caen until the end of the current campaign. Adrian, that is the news for the moment. I know it's a short one on a Friday, but there are four leagues that we need to cover off, plus give our betting tips, segment tips. Back to you.
Let's get straight into the action this weekend, and we'll go now to the Italian Serie A. Interesting to see how, of course, the participants in European football midweek respond to all different weeks, particularly for Juventus, and we will start there. Bologna, the team for Juve to take on this time around, an interesting Bologna side who have had some nice performances of late, but are still in the bottom three.
They're still in the bottom three, but at least under Sinisa Mihailovic, there is hope of staying up.
A lot more hope.
Under, of course, Filippo Inzaghi, you know, when you only have two wins for the entire season, or at least up to, 21 matches that he was in charge, there was a very strong fear that the Rosso Blu would be going down to Serie B, something they haven't done in a very, very long time. But at least now there is some sort of hope.
The big question, how do Juventus respond from their worst performance of the season?
Well, there's only one way. And there's only one way that this can ultimately go if you are a Juventus follower and supporter, is you probably want to see a very, very, very big win. I'm almost talking about the biggest one of the season. You can't go out there and dish up what was, you know, put out on Wednesday evening, Thursday morning here, local time, and not expect that the ramifications are going to be very serious. You need to go out there and absolutely destroy Bologna. It's the only way. It's the only way you start to forget about the Champions League in a little bit. You're ultimately not going to, but it's the start of something going forward.
Well, the Bianconeri have a very good record against most clubs domestically in Italy, but almost none better than their record against Bologna. Bologna, no win for 21 years against Juventus, not since the 3-0 in 1998. Juve were a very good club back then as well. But sometime there, it's a big opportunity here for Juve to respond. And I think it is important that they do exactly that. And I'm with you. I think multiple goals, a confident display, and a convincing performance all round, perhaps with a few tweaks to the formation as Allegri now. We said earlier, the question marks have been raised. He's come out and said, we have 20 days to get things right. You've got a few games in that time, Allegri. Get it right. But how do you get it right? You don't get it right by doing the same thing. You get it right by mixing and matching and changing a few things up. That will be the test for Allegri this weekend against Bologna, where they are expected to win. But again, the comforts of Serie A, the fact they are so far clear at the top and well clear of Napoli and there's no chance of anyone catching them, does that work in their favour? For me, I think from a professional perspective, nothing should change. They should take it very seriously and be very keen to make amends with one eye on the second leg at Juventus in a few weeks' time. But how do they approach this game after what is a tough pill to swallow, that 2-0 loss, which could have been a whole lot more, will be the big talking point. But players that need to step up. We saw Ronaldo not at his best. Given a 4.5 rating, Rick, out of 10 by Gazzetta in the Italian papers for his rating against Atletico. Paulo Dybala, of course, non-existent against Atleti. Mario Mandzukic nowhere near it. Poor defensive midfield performances as well. So players individually also need to step up. And, you know, some even recently when we talk about Ronaldo questioning, well, was he worth it? He was brought here to deliver in these big games. Sure, he scored his 20-odd goals this season and he's looking good and he'll break all of these records, but that's not why we paid 105-plus million is what the fans are saying.
Yep, now he needs to respond to all those detractors. He needs to turn up. Firstly, he needs to help Juventus win a Scudetto, which you would think is almost done.
Almost done.
But he needs to now lead this team into the second leg and beyond in the Champions League.
There is a record on the line for Juve. They are breaking records. They win this game, they'll become the first team in Italian history to win 22 of their first 25 matches. That means there's never been a more dominant season than this one right now. Yes, that's a plus. But again, I'm sorry, they did not purchase Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the best players in history, if not the best player in history, for that.
Correct.
No. They want more, and it's fair enough that they want more. You spend the big bucks, your club record signing. You could say they deserve more. They've worked themselves out, but no, not off the performances that we saw during the week. I am going to predict a convincing win here, though, for Juve. I say 3-0 win, and they will continue that 21-year run of dominance against Bologna.
I'm going to say 4-0. That's what I expect, and that's what I think will happen.
Really is the first step for this next little phase for the Bianconeri with some bigger games to come. One match I'm really looking forward to this weekend in Italy is Milan-Empoli. Now, Milan, they get a favourable draw here. They've got some winnable games coming up. They overcame Atalanta in what was undoubtedly the biggest match, I believe, under Gennaro Gattuso. Now, obviously, they've played higher-profile fixtures, but given how good Atalanta have been this season and given the timing of this match, this was about it. If they could step up and win in Bergamo, a ground that's tough to go to, a ground where the Atalanta side had achieved some significant results in both the Coppa Italia and Serie A, that would be the turning point. And, well, Milan and Gattuso stepped up, 3-1 win on the road, and now they come into a match against Empoli where, well, this Milan side of 2 months ago, maybe we'd say, okay, danger game here against an Empoli side that won 3-0 against Sassuolo last weekend, but all of a sudden they're up and running. They are playing exceptional football, undefeated in the league in 2019. They haven't tasted a defeat in the league for a very long time. In fact, not since a 1-0 loss against Fiorentina, which was now 7 games ago. They are where they need to be. And I think a win to nil with another clean sheet, another dominant Donnarumma display is on the cards here.
A solid 3-0 is what I'm expecting, to be honest. I think, yes, the reliance on one particular Polish international who's only signed, what, January 30, if I'm not mistaken. So we're talking about, well, what, 30 days ago, if that, you can just see how he's changed the entire complexion of this Rossoneri outfit. Yeah, 3-0 for me.
Of course, coming off the back of that stunning double against Atalanta. Is he the signing of the season in maybe even European football? Because he's come out of nowhere. It's a steal for Milan. Genoa obviously discovered him, but it's an absolute steal for Milan. And given, look, we could be looking back on this signing in 5 years' time and saying this was one of the most integral signings for any big club in European football this decade?
Quite possibly. I'll put him in the top five. I think I'll be a bit conservative and a bit generous, but I'd say he's definitely within the top five. Between him, maybe Parker you throw in there, Jason Denier of Lyon.
Yep.
There's a few of them that you would say would almost be of similar sort of significance, but definitely Piontek is in that list.
Huge, huge signing for Milan. And if he can score again, they get another 3 points. They're just doing those top four favours all the more good, because it's an important, very important season for Gattuso and Milan. They do come up against a side in Empoli here that they haven't been supremely dominant over. Mm. No clean sheet against Empoli since 2006. Only one win in their last four meetings. Empoli have been in Serie B in some of that time, but you just feel where they're at the moment. Romagnoli, one of the best defenders in Italian football. Very talented midfield that are playing very well together. Paquetá settled in well and taking his teammates to another level, and Piontek up top. Yes, it looks like a straightforward Milan win. Suso will be suspended though, so someone will need to come in and replace him. The most interesting element about Milan though has to be Gattuso, because the pressure has been on him all season. And like Di Francesco at Roma, he stepped up and they've turned it around. Maybe Piontek is the reason, but Gattuso has brought the best out of these players. The motivation is there, the passion is there. And he admitted, I don't always see eye to eye with the Milan board, but I don't need their praise because there's always respect. And I think they're working very well collectively together, despite the earlier issues that they had this season when he was very close to the axe, as they were saying he could have been sacked earlier on in the campaign. As for their crosstown rivals, Inter, this is the match of the round. Fiorentina-Inter, cannot wait for this, because Fiorentina have been very solid. They've taken some good results of late. They've been solid defensively at times as well. They have been involved in a few high-scoring affairs, a 4-3 recently, I recall, against Chievo. But, well, the Mauro Icardi saga is what dominates this one again, because Icardi didn't play midweek. He didn't play last weekend against Sampdoria. He didn't play in the first against Rapid Vienna. But Inter have got the results without him. Inter have stepped up without him. Inter have not conceded a goal without him. They have won games without him. Do you bring him back fit or not? Whether or not even the rumours of him being injured were true or not, because Juan Donato, the wife and agent, has slammed reports saying that they're just faking an injury. They're manipulating the fact that he's actually injured. Irrespective of that, given their recent form, 3 wins in a week, do you just omit him and stick with the winning formula?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Without Icardi, they've scored multiple goals in matches.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the interesting enigma or the paradox that has really emerged. I mean, 4 against Rapid Vienna, 2 last weekend against Parma. With Icardi, it was one man only focused. Get it to him. Hopefully he can find the back of the net. It seems to me that at the moment with Spalletti, the others around him are all working better. Lautaro Martinez, of course, Raja Nainggolan, Ivan Perisic.
Mm-hmm. Politano scored this morning
as well in the Rapid Vienna win. It just seems they've got a few more options rather than just looking to the Argentine, who only can seem to score one every game.
It's very interesting, but Fiorentina will not be an easy beat with or without Icardi. How do they respond from midweek? Are they buoyant as a result of going through to the round of 16? They'll, of course, know their fate with regards to who they're taking on. But looking forward to this. But Fiorentina are unbeaten in 2019. Are they ready to take another big scalp with a few of their youngsters now really performing at a high level? Of course, we've spoken about Chiesa, Simeone. These players really coming on. It's going to be the match of the round, no doubt about it, in Italy. So do not miss that. The other big game is Parma-Napoli, of course. Parma recently have been up and down. 3-3 with Juve a couple of weeks ago, looked good. They come here against the Napoli side that obviously cruised through against Zurich in the Europa League this morning. What read do you get on this match here? Because Napoli, again, nothing to play for in the league at all. Nothing.
But the problem is who have they played the last three matches? You've just touched on them. They've played the three teams that have happened to be in first, second and third place. Well, they're about to play the team that's in second. So they somehow came from behind 3-1 to draw 3-3 against Juventus. They unfortunately held Inter out for a very long time and only were defeated by them last week.
That's right.
And now they've got Napoli this week, who's just gone out and defeated Zurich in the Europa League. Not an easy run at all there if you are a Ducali supporter.
Exactly, and hence why they are winless in their last four. But Napoli only 1 win in their last four. But again, I'm just questioning here, what do Napoli have to gain in Serie A? Because finishing second or finishing fourth
doesn't make too much of a difference.
And they won't finish fourth because they're well clear. They're 12 points clear of fifth, Roma 11 points clear of fourth, Milan 7 clear of Inter, and 13 adrift of Juve. 13 points. There's obviously no hope there for Napoli. So Ancelotti and Napoli, will they win? I'm not so sure. They just need to ensure that they're continually scoring, because in those three recent draws that they've had in their last four games in the league, they've all been 0-0. So they're hard to break down, but they also haven't been as prolific going forward. Napoli will get the win, though. I'm tipping there.
Yes.
So Milan-Empoli is the opening game of the round. That match tomorrow morning, 6:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Torino-Atalanta is another interesting one. Obviously, Atalanta needing to respond from a 3-1 loss and a standing ovation from their home fans. But they take on Torino here. Rick, if Torino win this game against Atalanta, Torino will go ahead of Atalanta in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
It does not feel like that is the case, because Torino haven't been very good this season. Not as good as Atalanta have been. Many are saying Atalanta certainly
under the radar.
Completely under the radar. 0-0 earlier in the season. So if Torino win this, they will have a better head-to-head record over Atalanta. Both level on 38 points, and Torino will be sixth, depending on other results come the end of the round. Very interesting. Bologna-Juve, we touched on Sampdoria-Cagliari. Can Sampdoria finally end three straight defeats? Only one goal in that time. That can Cagliari get back on the score sheet? Well, here's an opportunity, but no game is an easy game here. And Cagliari, of course, coming off a rare win, just their fifth of the season against Parma. I hope that Sampdoria can, because they were also hopeful of finishing in the European spots, but they will need the 3 points here at home against that side. Chievo, Genoa, Sassuolo, Spal, and the final match is Frosinone, Roma. Roma, again, off the back of what they did in the Champions League a couple of weeks ago. They're back into some nice form. Another favourable game here against a side that, well, they should be beating. And if they do, it'll be four straight wins in all competitions.
They should, but Frosinone may have a chance to try and get themselves out of the relegation zone.
Talk to me how they can do that, Rick.
Well, they somehow need to beat Roma.
Without looking, do you know how many home games Frosinone have won this season?
Yeah, I know. It's not a lot, is it?
It's zero.
Exactly.
They have the worst home record in the competition. 5 draws, 6 defeats in 11 games. If Roma lose this or don't win, Roma, given the form we've seen, they must win. Di Francesco must lead this side to a win.
And but again, knowing Roma,
it's not certain.
It's not certain at all.
Interesting comments midweek by Zaniolo, of course, the youngster who's really burst onto the scene in recent months, joined from Inter in the summer. Zaniolo has hinted that he'd like to emulate Totti and be a one-club player at Roma. Well, obviously won't be a one-club player because he did start at Inter, but would like to play for a long time with Roma. So good to see that he's set her in. And, of course, so the pressure on Di Francesco, when we joke about the result, but the pressure is on because of those Sarri rumours, of course. So, again, he's not safe and secure at this club.
No. That's the thing.
There is one other game, Lazio-Udinese.
Postponed.
Why?
Because Lazio are playing in the Coppa Italia. That will be midweek. Unless the FIGC will reschedule it to the Saturday or the Sunday. The game is actually meant to be played Monday night, and this is to help Lazio sort of recover a little bit more from the Europa League schedule. So it is currently postponed, but do wait. That could be actually rescheduled to be played on the Sunday, and that would mean everything would be rosy.
Okay, so a slight overload of fixtures there for Lazio, but certainly looking forward to the action this weekend. One eye on Fiorentina-Inter, will not miss that. Milan-Empoli should be interesting watching. Well, how do you respond after that shocking defeat in Madrid midweek in the UEFA Champions League, with the pressure mounting on Massimiliano Allegri? And if you miss the end of our first hour, just recapping that after the 2-0 loss to Atleti, Juve's stock price, the share price there dropped by 10%. Quite incredible. And also, the seventh trending topic in Italy after the match was Zinedine Zidane. Nothing to do with any reports or rumours. It was just simply that fans wanted Allegri out and Zidane in. They have had enough. How will he be received by the Juve faithful? Of course, they're on the road this weekend, but particularly in their next match at home. Obviously, they will play at home again before welcoming Atleti to the Allianz Stadium in a few weeks' time. But it's a big week. They have one game against Udinese at home. I'm very curious to see how that plays out. Of course, not before a trip to Naples next weekend. We're all looking forward to that. We'll leave the Serie A preview there, of course, full recap of all the action in Italy Monday here on the program, so do not miss all of that. But we are off to a quick break. On the other side, we're taking a quick breather because still, La Liga, Ligue 1, Bundesliga, and award-winning betting tips, Rick, still to come. Stay tuned. Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR. Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back as we near the end to today's afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Keep the tweets coming in at FNR underscore radio with Spain, France and Germany still to look ahead to, as well as our tips. Plenty more coming up. We will go to Spain, Rick. La Liga. Let's have a look what is to come this weekend. Of course, Barcelona, the league leaders, 7 clear of Atleti, a further 2 back to Real Madrid. And they're in action in the game of the round this weekend. It's Sevilla-Barcelona. Always a nice game. Every time I think of Barcelona and Sevilla taking part on the pitch together, I always think of Rakitic. Of course, the beautiful story of Rakitic, who was a Sevilla player, met his wife, fell in love with
the town, the family,
the town, and everything to do with it. And it's always a special moment for him to return to Sevilla and play up against his former side. A massive match this for both teams for different reasons. Of course, Barcelona, 1 win in their last 5 in all competitions. They've struggled for goals, only 1 goal in their last 3. Not the best Barcelona side we have seen. 0-0 away from home against Lyon midweek in the Champions League. Of course, Sevilla taking care of Lazio both home and away, 3-0 on aggregate. But Sevilla last weekend in the league, Rick, pathetic. 3-0 loss to Villarreal, a 2-2 with Eibar before that, and a 1-0 loss to Celta Vigo. So their recent form in the league has been poor. These two sides met just a few weeks ago. It finished Barcelona 6, Sevilla 1. However, in the reverse in the first leg, Sevilla did win 2-0. They return home here against Barcelona. Can they pull off a first win in some time in La Liga, given the fact they've gone winless in 3? Or will Barcelona respond after another disappointing performance midweek at Lyon in the Champions League?
And that's what I'm sort of leaning towards. I'm leaning towards more the latter of Barcelona responding rather than Seville bringing that form that we saw against Lazio in the Europa League midweek and progressing that through into this match. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a little bit more cutthroat in terms of a score. And I think Barcelona actually might turn up and do something they haven't done in a while away from home, and that is win, and win brutally big. 3-4-0, maybe they might even eclipse that 6-1 from a few weeks ago.
They are on the road.
That's what I'm saying, on the road. But I think Barcelona almost need to show that, well, yeah, okay, they might be leading the league, but they haven't shown any ruthlessness recently. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Ernesto Valverde wants to see from his team. And I think a lot of fans are now wanting it. A lot of fans are now calling it. It might be time against one of those teams that have theoretically over the years been a feeder club for the Blaugrana to really step up and say, you know what, thank you very much for being a feeder. We now need to tear you apart come match day in the league.
Okay. Well, Sevilla haven't had much success against Barca recently. Obviously, they did win the first leg of the Copa del Rey recent meeting, but with exception to that, no win in the league since 2015 October, so 3.5 years, and it was a different look side there. Neymar getting a penalty for Barcelona. But look, I think Sevilla, yeah, I think they're up against it, a Barcelona side that they're going to need to respond. They're going to have to find goals, and they may need to, again, Suarez has been a player who you've been pretty hard on, thinking that he may be on his last legs, his knee not at its best.
Nice pun there. Very nice.
Figuratively speaking, Rick. But I think Sevilla here, given what we saw midweek, they may take some morale boost from the 3-0. I think a lot will fall on Ben Yedder, Wissam Ben Yedder, who, of course, has scored now 21 goals this season. Yeah, one of. All the informed strikers are your boys. 14.
I picked him early in the season. Even last season, I picked him.
Yes, you did. Well, Ben Yedder, 14 goals at home of his 21. So, again, Sevilla, we know how good they have been at home. They are unbeaten at home in their last 4. They've only had one loss at... Silly stat. They've only had one loss at home since the middle of September in all competitions. They've been very good at home, very poor on the road. I'm expecting an improved Barcelona side, but I'm not expecting a Barcelona win, Rick. I think this will end all square again. So I think we'll see Barcelona draw for the 5th time in 6 matches, which is a very rare outcome for this proud club. So I'm actually going to say a score draw, 1-1, Sevilla up against Barcelona. Looking forward to the Rakitic return, as I said, as always is the case. Can Messi inspire Barcelona? Can Suarez get on the score sheet? Coutinho, Dembele, there's a quality there, but I think Sevilla will hold them out here and it will end all square. And again, open the door to Atleti to perhaps close that gap, and Real, ever so slightly.
Let's wait and see.
Atleti are in action at the Wanda Metropolitano against Villarreal. This is a big one. Villarreal unbeaten in three La Liga games. One win was a 3-0 against Sevilla last weekend. And a couple of draws against Espanyol and Valladolid. Took care of Sporting Lisbon 2-1 on aggregate. They're in some good touch. And Atleti, who aren't in the best form, despite the 2-0 midweek against Juventus, could be a bit of a danger game here for the best performing side at home in La Liga this season. Because keep in mind what happened in the last La Liga meeting at home for Atletico Madrid, Rick.
Yeah, I know. They lost 1-0 to Real Betis. I remember that one.
And they also had a 3-1 loss to Real Madrid, Rick, more recently.
That too.
Their recent bad performances haven't been great. You just feel here against a Villarreal side that are growing in confidence that this may be a bit of a danger game for Atletico. And keep in mind as well, Alvaro Morata, I don't know where his head is at. Two goals in his time with Atleti, two goals against two of his former clubs, both ruled out via the VAR. Costa, of course, suspended for the second leg against Juventus. There are a few issues here amongst the attacking crop of Atleti players. And we know that they haven't been too prolific up top this season.
What makes it even more interesting is now that you've got Griezmann, Costa and Morata all fit, it almost starts to lend this team to playing, say, similar like a 4-3-1-2. So you end up having Griezmann as your playmaker, you end up having the other two as your number 9, the number 11s. But what does that then mean for Angel Correa, who is a traditional playmaker, but he is certainly down the pecking order as a playmaker? What does that then also mean for Thomas Partey, Thomas Lemar, Koke and Saul? It means that ultimately the formation or the midfield that will ultimately support that attack is going to play very narrow. Now, can you see Atletico Madrid turning into a very narrow team, considering it loves to play with a lot of width down the league, down the wings, and having, whether it be an Arias, a Juan Fran, a Felipe Luis, overlapping? I can't also see, if it does turn into this very narrow team, I can't see Juan Fran and Felipe Luis not being very much the pin boys at the back to stop any advancing attack. I can actually see a few goals in this one because we know how good the Villarreal attack is in that midfield in particular. It's just defensively where the big question marks are for the yellow submarine.
Your prediction for the match?
I'm going to go a narrow 1-0.
Another one of those.
Another one of those. Unfortunately, I think Atletico might just do enough just to get over the line.
Okay. I think Atleti should get the result. But again, Villarreal will be a stern test. Villarreal with a win, maybe even a point, depending on what Celta Vigo do, they could get themselves out of the drop zone, which is pleasing for fans of the yellow submarine. But Villarreal, 18th at the moment, 23 points, level on points with Vallecano, 19th. Huesca are bottom with 18 points. Huesca are away to Espanyol this weekend. They'll be looking to respond from another defeat last weekend. Espanyol needing to win, and if they do win, they get themselves back into the top half, so a big opportunity there. Vallecano are away to Getafe, who are fifth. If Sevilla slip up against Barcelona and Getafe win, Getafe are back in Champions League football positions, Rick.
Incredible. So tight, isn't it? Very,
similar
very tight.
To the case for Alaves, who take on Celta Vigo. So you've got Alaves and Getafe, who if Sevilla lose this weekend, they're in the top four.
It's very, very tight up the top.
Games this weekend in Spain include Athletic Bilbao, Eibar, Leganes, Valencia. How did Valencia go on after that convincing win, 3-0 on aggregate against Celtic in the Europa League? I'm expecting them to win. And if they win and Sevilla lose, again, they close within 2 points of the fourth place side. Valladolid, Betis. Betis, of course, eliminated from the the Europa League this week. They are still in the Copa del Rey semi-final, though, against Valencia. Girona, Real Sociedad, and the final match of the round, Levante, Real Madrid. Well, this has to be the match for Real Madrid to take the foot off, Rick, if I'm being frank. Because Real Madrid, we said how busy their upcoming schedule is. Mm-hmm. Two Clásicos, second leg of the Champions League round of 16 against Ajax. This is their final match before that week of mayhem, I suppose, because it's going to be enormous. Middle of next week, Real at the Bernabeu, Copa del Rey second leg semi-final.
The problem is, and we saw this last weekend, when Real Madrid and Solari decided to rotate the team a little bit, now I'm referring here to, of course, a certain Vinicius Junior, what happened?
Yes, they lost 1-2 to Girona last weekend.
So you can't do that if you are Real Madrid at this stage.
But they're well clear in the top four.
They are well clear, but the problem is Real Madrid have got too much pride on the line to see themselves slip out of the top four, to slip away and lose the battle for second place and see their crosstown rivals overtake them. And or, You know, we know how much Solari wants to win a title, and if it can't be the Champions League, then at the moment it has to be La Liga. Sure, they're in the running for the Copa del Rey.
They can't. Look, I just think they need to focus on a deep run in the Champions League, and I think they need to also focus on Ajax's second leg. That's it. They could win the Copa del Rey, sure, but this match against Levante needs to be will not be taken overly seriously, in my opinion. They can't, Rick. There's too much on the line in the other three games. The Clásico, there's pride in the league. The Clásico Copa del Rey, there's a trophy on the line because they can get through to the final where they'll go in as favourites. And, of course, the Champions League, well, arguably on par with the two Clásicos to come. But that and more to come. And, again, congratulations to Real Madrid, who yesterday celebrated 1,000 days as champions of Europe. That's right, 1,000 days, three straight Champions League wins. Of course, the first ever club to win back-to-back Champions League titles and obviously back-to-back-to-back as well. So a big weekend to come in Spain. Barcelona away to Sevilla. The match of the round, Atleti in action against Villarreal, and Real away to Levante. There could be a change in the top four with Getafe and Alaves hopeful of a Sevilla slip-up against the league leaders. All right, let's go to Ligue 1, Rick, this weekend. All eyes on the top few, as obviously PSG are well clear, but Lille, Lyon and Marseille, all with very interesting fixtures. Lyon particularly, Rick, in the match of the weekend for me in France. It's Monaco-Lyon. Now, Monaco out of the bottom few. They're unbeaten.
Temporarily.
They're out of the bottom three. They're 16th, unbeaten in their last three. This is their biggest test yet under Jardim.
Huge. You've got to imagine these two teams were both in the Champions League at the start of the season, and then we know what happened, unfortunately, under Jardim, and now he's been reappointed. We know that Lyon in particular have also gone on a bit of a surge at the moment, but they've also sort of had that loss a couple of weeks ago where they lost to us at Nice, I think 1-0, when they were on a really nice run up until that stage, and all of a sudden looked like they were going to knock on Lille's door and maybe take second place off them. So things have changed that slightly little bit. I won't rule out a Monaco win, but I think this is going to be more likely a Monaco draw with Lyon conceding a goal. So I'm thinking here maybe a score draw, maybe even a 2-2 type result.
Well, that defeat against Nice was their last match away from home in Ligue 1 for Lyon, and that was their first loss on the road in any competition, Champions League included, where they had to go to Hoffenheim and Shakhtar and Manchester City, their first loss away from home since early October when they lost 5-0 at PSG. I think Lyon will go here and win. And I think that we are currently documenting our betting tips to come shortly, but I think when we look ahead at this game, Lyon's class will prevail. Lyon just held out Barcelona, Rick. You're telling me they won't be able to hold out Monaco?
I think what they'll have done is they've gone, I won't say they've peaked too early, but they would have primed themselves for that match. And I think Monaco might be there ready to actually swoop and maybe take a point. And, you know, if things get a little bit luckier, maybe they might be able to take three at the Stade Louis II.
We'll agree to disagree there. I think Lyon will win comfortably away to Monaco. Of course, Jemison suspended for the match. Jovetic still out. A few key players returning, though, and this is the pleasing thing. This huge injury list they've had all season is now just thinning ever so slightly, which is good news as a few key players get back in the fold. A lot of experience in this Monaco side. They did finish in the top three, as Rick said, with Lyon and PSG last season, but they're at different ends of the table this time around. Important result if Lyon can win. Top three looking very good with a whole host of teams very, very close to them in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth, even with Nice just 3 points behind fourth place Marseille. PSG are in action at home this weekend against Nîmes. Should be a straightforward win. No, still no Neymar. Cavani is close to a return, but unlikely he'll return for this match. But again, PSG now, well, they're in cruise control in this competition, but they are now just ironing out all the small issues in the lead up to that second leg against United in 2 weeks' time.
This has looked like a straightforward, maybe a solid 2-3-0 type win here for PSG. Don't give Dijon too much hope. I know they're in the battle for the relegation zone, but I don't think, unfortunately, that they're going to do enough to get over the line.
I mentioned Lille have an interesting one. Well, they drew last weekend against Montpellier 0-0, which ended that winning streak. But now they go to Strasbourg, a Strasbourg side who have been very impressive, but just not of late. So winless in their last three, only 1 point in that time. That was against Caen, who have had issues.
Gone.
They've had massive issues this week. A bit of a danger game here for Lille. Can they respond from, obviously,
The nil-nil against Montpellier.
They also lost against Rennes. They were knocked out in the Coupe de France. Rennes defeating them. Yeah, Coupe de France quarterfinals 2-1. I don't know. Lille just not at their best across the board recently, but here against Strasbourg, if they can win, obviously that lead that is 10 points clear of fourth place Marseille in terms of Champions League football, well, with just 12 rounds remaining after this weekend, you'd have to say that Lille are very close to securing that Champions League spot.
You think that a win here would almost be giving them one foot in the door of securing the spot. Depending on what happens with Monaco-Lyon, the gap could be as small as 1 point. You don't want to get dragged into that battle for between second and, say, fourth in Ligue 1 at this stage. So Lille, unfortunately, just have to sort of keep playing to try and get all 3 points. That Montpellier draw last week and the scoreless stalemate may have hurt them a little bit, but they obviously had enough of a buffer zone. You just don't want to get back into the fold there when you are so far ahead of everybody else.
All right, let's go to the other games to come as we wrap up the Ligue 1 preview. Dijon-Saint-Étienne will be the first match. That one kicking off tomorrow morning. Strasbourg and Lille tomorrow morning as well. Amiens up against Nice. Guingamp, Angers. So how did Guingamp go? Obviously, had that 0-0 with Bordeaux midweek. Can they bank another point here against Angers, who have been in great form? 3 straight wins in the league, including a 3-0 over Nice. Angers win this, they go into the top half. So a big, big opportunity for them, but they do have to go away from home. Montpellier up against Reims, Nantes, Bordeaux, Toulouse against Cannes. Well, Cannes with a new manager.
Or a co-coach all of a sudden.
A co-coach, a new face at the top. Maybe an opportunity here. Toulouse without a win in 4. Cannes, well, ending that terrible losing streak. Maybe an opportunity for them, but given their recent form, unlikely.
Unlikely.
And Rennes-Marseille, the other game. Again, Marseille, 3 straight wins in the league. They're playing very well. Again, suddenly another coach who was under pressure, holding on to his job just. Can Rennes, after a very good result at Betis midweek, back it up in the league? We will see. But that is your Ligue 1 action for the weekend. Over to the German Bundesliga as we near the end to the program. Still our betting tips to come. Well, Borussia Dortmund, are you up to it? Because this is about it now. 3 straight draws in the league. What was a 9-point lead is now 3. 51 points. Bayern Munich, 48 points. Dortmund, 3 straight draws. And this weekend, they take on the red-hot Bayer Leverkusen. 4 straight wins in the league. Yes, embarrassed, I'd say, slightly midweek by Krasnodar this morning in the Europa League, because all they needed to do was defeat a side that haven't played a competitive game for 2 months, and they failed. 1-1, they go out on away goals. Can they respond with a short turnaround against Borussia Dortmund?
I'm going to say no, unfortunately. I think Dortmund actually might do enough to get the result.
This is the biggest game of their season.
Yeah, this is their biggest one, and we know that they've got a few more of these coming up in the next couple of match days. This isn't going to be easy here for Dortmund, but I feel that the 0-0 would have shaken them up completely. They are now fully aware that, you know, they could potentially lose the Bundesliga title as early as this weekend, if not by next weekend. They're going to have to turn up and they're going to have to show up that all their injuries that they have, and that they actually have a lot of squad depth ready to roll off the factory line.
Winless in 5 for Dortmund. They've thrown away that Bundesliga lead. They're on the verge of elimination in the Champions League. They're out of the German Cup. This is a must win, because the Bundesliga is their best hope of a piece of silverware, of course. This is an absolute must win against a side who, yes, will only have the best part of 72 hours to prepare after that second leg and elimination from the Europa League. So that's Dortmund. But prior to that, Bayern Munich, Hertha Berlin. Now, Munich win this match. Munich go temporarily top, well, equal top of the German Bundesliga. It will complete an incredible recovery, and the pressure will be on Borussia Dortmund. But first things first, Munich need to get the points against Hertha Berlin.
The problem is Hertha Berlin took all 3 points last time in the reverse fixture. This was the 2-0 just before the international break. And if I recall correctly, I was questioning at the time whether Manuel Neuer was fit to remain in goals for both club and country, because he did concede it to leading up into the UEFA Nations League run that ultimately Die Mannschaft did have. It's a different outfit completely from that September fixture. I'm still going to think, and I've still been saying this for a while, that both teams will actually score, but I still can see that Hertha Berlin won't get all 3 points in the end. I'm thinking maybe like a 2-1, 3-1 type result.
Bayern Munich without a win in their last 5 against Hertha Berlin. That's in normal time, because they did meet a couple of weeks ago in the German Cup. 3-2 after extra time. Kingsley Coman with a goal in the first half of extra time. But no win in five in 90 minutes for Bayern Munich. Hertha Berlin with one win, four draws in that time. Other matches this weekend, Werder Bremen up against Stuttgart will be an interesting one to kickstart the weekend. Can Munch and Gladbach respond from a couple of very poor performances against Wolfsburg? We will see. Freiburg, Augsburg, Mainz, Schalke, Dusseldorf up against Nürnberg, who should take some confidence from that 0-0 against Dortmund last weekend. You'd expect they will. Hannover, Eintracht Frankfurt. You're expecting Frankfurt to take the points there against the Hannover side that, well, they're struggling. Eintracht Frankfurt, though, four straight draws, but were they were incredible this morning, weren't they, against Shakhtar with that 4-1 win, ending that four straight draw there in all competitions. And the final match of the round, Leipzig-Hoffenheim, will be a great watch. Absolutely,
Leipzig to win.
Well, they need to win because Hoffenheim are one of the many teams that are trying to close in on their fourth place in the German Bundesliga. Rick, not too long to go at all. Just quickly to wrap up the program, thanks to our friends at BetInTips. Visit their website, www.betintips.com, for our full list of tips from the weekend. Great success of late, but Rick, your very best tip as we close out the program.
My actual very, very best tip, now this is going to be one that I'll probably sneakily keep to myself and won't tell too many people now, is Rennes. Now, I don't speak about Rennes too often, but they do play Marseille this weekend.
Yes.
I give them a chance to get a result.
Lovely.
Nice little
win
juicy.
Or draw.
Win or draw. There double chance.
Sevilla nice. Underdogs, Rennes to get the points. For me, Newcastle to defeat Huddersfield in the English Premier League, the odds are absurd and they will just win. Their form of late has been good. The other one, I do believe that Lyon will go to Monaco and win. Again, I think way over. So Lyon, Rennes win or draw, and Newcastle, good luck, enjoy. Gamble responsibly. That's us done for the week. Plenty more coming up Monday. Join us at the same time to do it all over again. For now, though, for myself, Adriano Del Monte, and Rick D'Andrea, this has been Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.